to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian. And today we have an episode.
We do, yes. We are very excited to be bringing this show.
An episode of this show, not an episode like an incident. Yeah, or like you know, having
a brief mental breakdown. An emotional... Although that does happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, there's been a lot of bad news going around. Mm. Spent yesterday helping...
Consoling a friend.
Yeah, who had all the bad things happen to him all at once. And he was like, is this adulthood? And I was like, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bad things happen because that's life. It's just normal suffering. There's certain kinds of normal suffering that, like, no degree of wealth or privilege can save you from. Unrequited mm-hmm. love, death of a parent, death by accident in the family, that kind of thing. There's yeah. certain things
not
that...
Not death, really.
Well, yeah. I mean, those are just universal examples of stuff that anyone can deal with. But, like, when everything happens to you all at once, mm. and then you have a year and a half of no problems, and he's like, why is it happening that way? And I was like, it's... It's life, yeah. man.
Yeah, you know, you could be having a great time, and then life is like, you know what, you need a wrench in the works. That's what you need. You need a bad day.
You need a CRA audit. That's what you yeah. need. Oh.
Yeah, you need to be dumped by the guy you've moved town for. Yeah. Like, that's... Actually, speaking of it, I do think that
and individually,
our mutual
each,
friend...
Each problem is easy to deal with on its own. But in
it's
the
just
context,
the compounded.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, actually, that reminds me. So our mutual friend came to Ottawa to be with his at the time boyfriend.
Yeah,
and now sadly things have fallen apart. This was a classic case of one person who likes them more than the other person likes them back.
Yeah,
yeah. Differing levels of love, and it makes me think of there was a story out recently about a guy who met a guy on Grindr in London, UK.
Okay.
And the guy he met was like, I can do the next hour, otherwise I have to catch a flight and I'll be back, you know, in 5 days. And
yeah.
the guy's like, where are you going? He's like, I'm going to Helsinki for meetings. And he's like, unless you want to come to Helsinki. To which the guy said yes.
Oh my God.
And flew to Helsinki for a Grindr date. And apparently he was very happy with it. He's like, you know, normally when you meet people on Grindr or Tinder or hookup apps, it's yeah. like you might get away with a Starbucks if you're very lucky. But he said that, you know what, going this extra mile or extra 150 miles meant that they actually had a real date and, like, paid attention to each other.
Mm.
I'm not recommending that people listening go to Helsinki to meet people, but I think... At the principal level, it's about investing the time.
You can get the same effect by just not putting out in the first hour. And that's not sarcasm. Like, mm. I'm like, just wait 1 hour, being like, my zipper is going to stay up until 7:15. I just checked the hair on the back of my wrist when I
yeah,
did that.
That's how you measure time.
Yeah, by looking at the hair on the back of my wrist. But, yeah. you know, it was a metaphor that represented mm-hmm. checking the time. But yeah, no, or even, you know, if you want to be a little bit more extreme about it, just don't put out on the first date.
Well, yeah, it's about just having that. All of this is to say, and we're recording, ironically, on Valentine's Day. So for our listeners, that was all of last week. But it's just about, these are examples of people where pausing, taking a hot minute
yeah.
to sit and think,
yeah.
get to know the other person.
You don't make the effort to make a connection, and then you're alarmed that you didn't make a connection.
Yeah. Actually, when me and Jake first started dating, it was at the three-month mark. Our regular listeners may have heard this story before, but it was at the three-month mark, and I said to you, because yeah. we were roommates at the time, I said, you know what? I think I might end it with me and Jake.
Yeah.
And you said...
Choice words that are not safe for radio.
Yes. And essentially the question was why? Why am I,
yeah.
you know? And it was really quite...
In short, I called you a dum-dum poo-poo head.
Yes.
That's the polite version of what I called
you. But it was...
You.
I was being hypocritical, and I'm glad that you called me out on it, because yeah. we talk a lot about how, specifically with gay men, they treat each other as disposable products.
Yeah.
Like Grindr is designed like a Sears catalog where you flip through the pages, you know, to find the one you like. And,
yeah.
you know, you can hit like on it with the hot tap button thingy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that makes people just a disposable commodity. The idea that there are plenty of other fish in the sea. Well, in reality,
there's not a lot of gay men.
Yeah.
There's just not enough of us to treat each other that way. Especially since, like this is the way that I think about it. Think about your high school graduating year.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So I went to a pretty small high school. There's 750 of us total. And there was maybe 150 people in my year. How many of those people did I actually get along with? Like, a dozen. All right?
Yeah. You're talking 5 to 7% of them are gay.
Yeah, lower than that.
Well, optimistically, we're talking 5 to 7%.
Well, optimistically, we'll say 5% if anything else, because it's a nice round number that's easy to do math.
So you're talking at what? That's like 7 people?
And then I get along well with 10 people, so like 5% times 10% would work out to be 0.5%.
Yeah.
And that's just like starting to be dateable. And that's not a good number. And it moves on beyond there. So, I mean, your ability to be picky is quite limited when you're homosexual, just because, you know.
Well, I think it boils down to, you know, in the case of our mutual friend, you know, I think that it's just unfortunate.
I think that
is what it is. But our advice really is, you know, take time, have conversations, learn about each other. Communication, so vital. And there are, we have older listeners who are like, honey, please, I'm, you know, 40, 50 plus, we know this, move on. But some of our younger listeners, take in the hot minute, sit and talk, have a coffee, go for a dinner. You know, it makes forcing people to have a conversation.
And there's also the awkward reality that if you have 80% of your interests and personality in common with another person, that's actually really astounding. Like, if you disagree about 20% of things, like, that's not necessarily a barrier.
Well, it turns out that once you've got past this initial dating phase, and things are going well, and you get married, like, as a same-sex couple,
what happens is you get studied.
You do get studied.
What does the latest study have
to say?
Well,
the New York Times ran an op-ed about how gay marriages are really the model for same-sex couples. And they were pointing to a couple...
Specifically male same-sex couples.
Sorry, gay marriage is the model for opposite-sex couples. So heterosexual couples. And they were pointing to a couple of studies. One of them was a study in the Journal of Marriage and Family. Now, what this study did was they asked, let me get the number here, 756 midlife U.S. men and women and 378 gay and lesbian, or in 378 gay and lesbian and heterosexual marriages. So 378 married people, some of whom are gay, some of whom are lesbian.
Wait, is it 378 couples or 378
couples who are married.
Okay, and that doubles out to the 700.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
Sticks two to marry.
Yeah.
Unless you're like Emma Watson or Lady Gaga, both of whom have decided to
marry
propose
themselves.
To themselves. Yeah. But anyway, so they have 378 couples, and what they did is they asked each of them to write a diary. Dear diary, today I've been rather stressed by my wife of 10 years on account of not doing the dishes, or whatever it was. It was the idea that each of them all have to write a diary, and particularly noting if and when and how they've been stressed by their marriage or their partner. And what they found was women in opposite sex marriages, so your normal hetero marriage, were the most stressed of anybody. Now, I feel like I've watched enough TV to know that's probably true.
Okay.
And then after that, you've got women in same-sex marriages, so lesbian couples that are a bit stressed out.
So all women were more stressed than all men.
Yes. And then you've got men in opposite-sex couples.
Right.
But then men in same-sex couples, totally chill.
I think part of it is you have the same bad habits. So men don't get angry when other men don't put the seat down. And I think women don't get angry when other women leave a toilet filled with urine and one single square of toilet paper.
I don't do that.
No, because you're not a woman.
Oh, I see. But the...
This is one of the beefs that I have. Like, women complain about men leaving the seat up. And fair enough, I put the seat down because there's always a shelving unit above the toilet, and I don't want my shaving cream to fall in there.
Yeah.
But, so, I mean, I put everything down. But then...
I grew up with a lot of women in the house, so I always put the seat down.
So, but then when you go in after a woman, a lot of times it'll just be, like, a single square of toilet paper floating.
I think that may have just been, like, your mum.
No. I've had many female roommates. Okay. It's a weird habit that stand-up comics are not talking about.
So
point being that men tend to have similar bad habits and women tend to have similar bad habits.
But that's not what this study says, which is really interesting.
So it's not a matter of being annoyed less.
No.
Okay.
It's about stress. And I think what's really quite cool, there was another study they pointed to as well, but one of the reasons they came to on this one is that male same-sex relationships, and to a degree female same-sex relationships, there isn't a standard model.
Mm.
Like, who takes out the trash and who does dishes? Like, gay relationships are remarkably egalitarian, and there's always a conversation around, who's doing this, who's doing that.
It's an ongoing negotiation.
There's a lot of communication and negotiation because there aren't those expected roles to the same degree as there is in a heterosexual couple.
I mean, there's weird expectations on bedroom roles in same-sex relationships, but that's a different thing.
They go on to say that same-sex male relationships are more likely to have the conversation around if they're doing an open relationship, if they're bringing somebody else into the bedroom, what they're going to do in the bedroom. Apparently gay men are quite happy to talk about these things.
Yeah.
So what they're saying is the fact that same-sex male relationships are having more conversations around cleaning, tasks around the house, who's making dinner, all the way through to whether or not to have a threesome, the fact that they are just having more of those conversations compared to straight relationships, they think is a reason why straight relationships are, it's a lesson to be learned. If straight people had more of these conversations and made having this conversation more of a part of their ongoing life, they'll be a bit less stressed out.
Well, I mean, also to not be offended by asking the question. Because, like, you could be in a couple and say, is this an open relationship? And in the back of your mind, you might be thinking, I hope the answer is no. But you're asking the question so that it gets out in the open, so that everyone's on the same page. These are the rules. Mm-hmm. And quite often what happens is you get sort of a prisoner's dilemma kind of a situation. Well, maybe not prisoner's dilemma. Anyway, point being, where you're asking because you want to know, but you don't have a horse in the race. And the other person acts offended, not because they are offended, because they feel like they're supposed to be offended. And then the first person gets their tail up, and then the second person gets their tail up, and it's really just, like, let's be honest here, no assumptions. I think, like, the fact, I mean, men do tend to be a little bit socially dopey.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that there are no rules also comes from the fact that a lot of men don't understand the rules, and they're like, what are the rules again? What are we doing? And the other guy's I don't know. Let's make them up ourselves.
I don't know if I told our listeners this, but when me and Jake went in to get our wedding rings.
Mm.
I was concerned because my engagement ring and my wedding ring wouldn't fit on the same finger. They're both quite big rings. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Because traditionally you have them on the same finger.
Well, there is a move to have engagement jewelry that is not a ring so that it does not conflict. So like the engagement locket or an engagement bracelet or an
but
engagement.
Anyway, the sales lady just looks at me and she says, which other part of your wedding is traditional? And I'm like, you know what, lady, you got a good point here. Why am I stressing out over the rings not sitting on the same finger when nothing else that we do as a gay couple follows that sort of standard traditional model? And I think that, we're happy. I love Jake. We're going to have a great wedding. And apparently we're going to be slightly less stressed out. But what I think is concerning here is it is so unfortunate that the majority of Canadians, because the vast majority of people are straight, but the majority of Canadians are sort of beholden, whether or not they think about it or not, to these expectations of what a man does, what a woman does. You know, who's supposed to be doing the laundry? Who's supposed to be doing the dishes?
Well, I've seen a lot of couples get around that. If it occurs to them at the very start to just outright reject all assumptions and say, all assumptions off the table, what are you willing to do? What am I willing to do? Let's negotiate. Like, one of the things that I have discovered, I do this a lot with basically every roommate I've ever had, is I would rather do all the dishes, including yours, than ever have to clean a bathtub. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if you remember, but I did a lot of dishes.
Yeah, and I did the bathtub. Yeah.
And it was just like, that's the negotiation, you know? And it's... And when I lived with Jess, she was like, I also hate doing the bathrooms. Curses! We'll have to take turns. And
yeah.
But yeah, no, it was just getting over those assumptions and just negotiating. And I think, like, I've met a lot of opposite-sex couples that have no problem whatsoever. As soon as they figure out, oh yeah, like, first of all, don't make exceptions. Second of all, don't get offended by a question being asked.
Yeah.
At least wait until you've heard the answer to be offended. At least wait that far.
I mean, some people are saying that, you know, the secret, as a result of this, you know, the secret to a happy marriage is to be a bit gayer. And I'm like, not true. The secret to, I think, a less stressful marriage is more open communication. Mm-hmm. And that's not a secret. You talk to any marriage therapist, any happy couple.
Yeah.
You know, being able to effectively communicate with each other is so key. And that doesn't mean you have to talk every day, but being, you know, effective communication doesn't mean constant communication. It just means...
You actually do have to talk every day for about an hour and a half every day, but it doesn't have to be about anything important. You just need to check in. Mm-hmm. You need to be in each other's lives.
The process of having a conversation releases endorphins. Like, it is good for you, medically good for you, to have a conversation with your spouse.
I mean, I've already had 3 orgasms so far.
I know, it's true. You were just like splooshed.
I mean, I'm having one right now, clearly.
Now, there is another
All this part, conversation. Mm-mm-mm.
There is another part to this that I actually disagree with.
Oh.
And one of the ideas is that they found that couples in same-sex marriages spend more time with their children. Those who have children.
Right, okay.
Because there's a lower percentage of them, of the children, who are accidental or unwanted.
Okay,
it's very difficult for a gay couple to get accidentally pregnant.
Right.
Like, logistically speaking, we've been trying and it won't happen.
You could have a child from a previous
marriage.
Couple, yeah, exactly. Or something like that. And it could be, surprise, I poked holes in the condom. Like, that kind of stuff does happen. Mm-hmm. Surprise, those were just Tic Tacs. Like,
well, there was a much older 2011 study in the States that found that 45% of pregnancies were unintended and 18% of them were unwanted.
If you compared, like, same-sex couples with children to opposite-sex couples whose children come from IVF treatments, because those are people who are spending, like, $500,000 to $100,000 a year.
Exactly, yeah.
So if you compared those two populations, you'd have a much more
honest... I'm sure they're equally as thrilled. But you're absolutely right. You're on the money there that gay people, because you can't accidentally get pregnant when you're two women and two men...
Not in your current relationship.
No. Yeah. It would be quite tricky to make that happen.
Yeah.
For our listeners, I assume they know how the plumbing works, but when you've got two of the same type of tap, it's not going to make a baby. Mm. So the idea is that for those then who have children, it's been a very thought-out, purposeful decision to make that happen.
Right.
Or, like you said, children from a previous heterosexual relationship. Yeah. Now, whereas with same-sex couples, it could have been a one-night stand, it could have been... You know,
opposite sex couples.
It could have been, you know, faulty condom. It could have been any of those things.
You don't accidentally go through a 16-month process of adoption.
No. One doesn't accidentally get IVF treatment.
Unless you're, like, really drunk. Like, that's a big bender.
I mean, I don't know if you'd get through the adoption process if you're that drunk.
I mean, maybe you're very high functioning. Maybe you're Lucille Bluth. You know?
Well, who knows? But their argument is that part of why same-sex marriages and couples are happier is because their relationships with their children are far more intentful. Like
your accent, it sounded like you said same-sex couples were more harpier.
Happier. Because, you know, the odds of being with unwanted children is much, much lower.
Although I will say, I've seen your partner in a bad mood, and harpy is.
But this is the fundamental piece I disagree with.
Okay.
I don't think just because a child was an accident or not something you planned means that your relationship is less effective or efficient than a same-sex couple that went through, you know, an 18-month adoption process. Because there are many, many, many straight people who have had accidental children up the wazoo.
Yeah.
And they are very happy, friendly relationships.
My mother saying that my brother was like a pseudo-accident. Like, she wanted a kid, just not yet. And she was like, well, year and a half earlier than expected. Oh, well, here we go. Like, it's not really an accident. But it was just not yet, but, well, here I am. Here we go.
But I think this boils down again. And
that is, like, an unexpected pregnancy. Yeah. That you're just like, all right, let's
roll with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wanted it eventually. Yeah.
I think this speaks back to that sort of fundamental difference between homosexual couples and heterosexual couples.
Mm-hmm.
Is that with homosexual couples, there is a lot more, there has to be a lot more communication and a lot more intent clearly outlined. You can't get accidentally pregnant and then have to get married.
I have seen gay couples that do make a lot of assumptions. Like, I am taller, older, and
therefore I'm the daddy.
I'm the daddy, and therefore I do all the following things. And the other one is like, well, I guess so. And then they don't tend to last very long.
No.
Or they're built on, like, they're basically, like, enacting a BDSM relationship, pretending like it's a romantic relationship.
Yeah, and we see that with sort of early relationship gay couples to a little degree. But we're talking here about people who are married with kids. You've weeded past that point at that point.
Past the three-month mark, you don't see a lot of gay couples like that.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to jump to a song. Let us know what you think. Will your marriage be better if it was just a touch gayer? Or is really the conversation here all about communication?
And not making assumptions.
And not making assumptions. Let us know at TalkCanQueer on Twitter and Facebook. We'd happily hear your thoughts. We're playing the first song, which is...
Yeah, I chose... Because Eurovision is coming up.
Yeah, and you've banned me from playing any Eurovision.
Well, I haven't banned you from Eurovision. I just didn't want it to be all Eurovision all the time. So today I figured we'll do something that's very not Eurovision.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a blues and soul theme today.
I like it.
There actually is a lot of LGBT content in the history of blues and souls.
Mm-hmm.
Not souls. Just soul.
Soul.
Singular. Yeah. Soul music. We'll start off with Jackie Shane, who is a... she actually did eventually identify as trans. I was about to say, I don't want to call her...
The first big trans musician.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't want to call her trans because the word trans didn't exist yet when she started recording, but she did later in life identify as trans. So yeah. It does work out. Anyway, from Toronto, and the song Coming Down, and then followed up by some Little Richard. You know I love me some Little Richard.
We do love some Little Richard.
And he's actually nicknamed the Godfather of Soul. He didn't really invent Soul, but the people who did start Soul were very inspired by him. So we'll listen to some Hurry Sundown, and you'll see why he's the Godfather of Soul. I'm coming down, 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 coming down with a heartache. I ain't sick, but I got a beat. Blood pressure running high. Clothes ain't right, I can't sleep at night. And here's the reason why. You ain't been around for a week or two. Said I ain't see the high. Ain't in the kind of condition
Hurry down, son. Won't you hurry on down. Let the weary day be over. I'm so tired of the hurt. I've been taking, my heart has been aching so.
Welcome to Cancqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
And that was some two old gays, a couple of old queers there, Jackie Shane and...
Little Richard.
Little Richard, yeah. And he's Elton John, but he was an inspiration for Elton John.
So, yes, he was,
but,
yes.
But not Elton John himself. Now, some bad news that I wanted to sort of share with our Canadian listenership.
Mm-hmm.
And I think really what this is an example of what we're seeing globally.
Okay.
So there is a non-profit gym in Edmonton, or there was, because it's closing, called Queer Flex.
Okay.
And I thought it was a pretty cool name, actually. And it was a non-profit gym, and their whole idea is, the sort of fundamental ethos was about creating an accessible space where people can feel safe to come and work out. So there was no talk about dieting, no talk about body shapes and body size. There's no scales, the mirrors are taken off. So it's more about just going there and working out, and less about that sort of body culture that occurs in a lot of gyms. That's how they wanted to differentiate themselves.
Well, the problem is that the mirrors aren't there for vanity. They're there to check your form so you don't hurt yourself when you're doing free
weights.
Well,
they obviously didn't have any free weights there, is what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. All right. Mm-hmm.
So they worried about... They also had trainers on site that can help and so on and so forth.
Okay, yeah.
Now, the problem is that this particular non-profit gym, I don't know if they didn't have free weights, but they didn't have any mirrors.
Okay.
So I assume they maybe have a policy of having a trainer to spot you, etc.
Okay.
Anyway, but the whole idea was that it's this accessible space. Go there, work out. Calorie counters on the cardio equipment had bits of tape on them. It wasn't about...
Okay.
It's not about the shape of your body. It's about working out and having a space to work out without being that sort of diet culture, muscle gaining feel. Now, it's worth giving a bit of context here before we talk about the bad news.
Okay.
To our straight listeners. Gay men have a disproportionate rate of bigorexia.
Oh man, there's a disproportionate rate of liver and kidney failure, if not from working out to gain muscle to the point where they destroy their bodies, then from eating disorders mm-hmm. where they basically starve themselves skinny and destroy their body that way. There's a lot of body type manipulation happening within especially the gay male, but not uniquely the gay male.
Not exclusively, yeah. So bigorexia is that sort of addiction to body mass building.
Yeah.
And of course, trans folks, I think would safe to be say, very, very, very often, if not all, have body dysmorphia.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's the sort of psychological impact of disassociating with your own body.
Yeah, a lot of trans men feel more pressured to have a certain body type.
So within that context of people who really struggle, as a population that really struggles and suffers from their own bodies, having mirrors everywhere and people constantly talking about calories and fad diets, not the safest space to be in. So that, for me, a queer gym without mirrors, it makes a lot of sense.
For me, I mean, the principle of the idea is something that I have wanted to exist forever, but I also know in my mind that it is a very easy way for that to transition into being a cringe kind of, going from, instead of being a hostile environment, being a cringe environment. Mm-hmm. Like there's a narrow band between the two that I would love. Whether or not it exists, I don't know. I'd have to check it out. Because I've also gone to places that I would assume would be like big, greasy, gym bro culture place, and it actually turns out to be very friendly. It's really hard to predict.
So Queer Flex was founded in 2016, so it's relatively recent. But what they've announced was that on February 29th, they'll be closing permanently.
Oh.
And the reason why is because on September the 10th, Patriot Pride Canada-wide, which is a right-wing organization out west that I think operates nationally, began doxing all of their staff and a number of their clients. Now, for our listeners who aren't familiar with what doxing is, maybe this is something you can explain.
Well, doxing is when you reveal the personal information of an individual, especially if you release it online so that all individuals can access it. So home address, personal phone number, cell phone number. And it's a way of doxing itself is only half the problem. The other half is things like 40 pizzas showing up on your doorstep at 3 in the morning. That kind of thing. Like,
people may be familiar with swatting, which is calling the police for an address saying that there's somebody armed with a gun.
Yeah, a few dozen people have been killed in swatting incidents.
Yeah.
So like it's really, really, really serious. So the doxing itself is a prelude to what's really actually
absolutely
the harm.
So they found that they were doxing all of their staff and the clients, which obviously puts everybody at risk. And people weren't keen on going to a gym where their identity will be published by a what's being called a right-wing extremist hate group.
Like, for me, that's I don't understand why they would go out of their way to do this. I feel like there's something missing in this story. I don't know. We'll have to keep it.
Well, the Patriot Pride Canada-wide said that Queer Flex was a breeding ground for domestic terrorism.
What?
It's a gym with like a bit of CrossFit. Like, that's about it. And saying that the people who use the gym are gender-confused unicorns. Now, I don't think unicorns exist. Sorry for our younger listeners out there. And these are just real people. They're real people looking for a safe space to go and work out.
Okay.
So that's sort of vitriol, that hate, that discrimination that sort of motivated this right-wing hate group to release all of their public information from the staff and some of the clientele.
And this was in Saskatchewan? Where was it?
Edmonton,
Alberta. Edmonton, okay.
Now, people are thinking, oh, Alberta. Alberta is, you know, pretty conservative and right-wing, hardly surprising. Well, I disagree. In Calgary and Edmonton, these are incredibly metropolitan cities.
Alberta is such a strange beast because the current government there is conservative, but the one before that was not only were they NDP, but the provincial NDP in Alberta are exceptionally left-leaning, even among the NDP. And they got voted in, not necessarily on a landslide, but on a very strong turnout.
From all of the cities.
Yeah.
Because it's within these urban areas that there's a, you know, a decent left-wing organization.
I mean, a lot of people compare it to Texas. It's the Texas of Canada. And if you look at the demographics of Texas, rural Texas has some of the most conservative people in America. But Austin has some of the most progressive people in America. Same thing if you look at Alberta. The big cities are very progressive. The suburbs, I would say the suburbs of Alberta, Edmonton and Calgary are... particularly conservative, probably more conservative than the countryside. Suburbs are, I would say, the strongholds of modern conservatism and not the countryside, despite what... I mean, there's this bizarro assumption, but when you actually look at the demographics, it's... countryside's way more mixed.
Yeah.
Especially since the NDP are very aggressive about supporting farmers. So, of course, the countryside's going to be on the fence about that sort of thing. But, yeah, point being...
They were targeted by this hate group.
Yeah, there's weird extra layers going on here that I would like to find out about. Because why them? Why not one of the various like call-in centers or?
Well, they have. This particular group has also targeted an organization within Edmonton that encourages businesses not to support Nazis. Okay. So, you know, it's they seem to be zeroing in on what are seen as symbols of leftist snowflake culture. But what in reality is just a gym where people who may have body dysmorphia, bigorexia, various conditions, or just want a safe space to work out. Mm. Now, the result of this targeting and revealing their information meant that for the security of the clients, they stopped doing group fitness training sessions. They lost any inflow of new clientele because who wants to go to a gym where you're going to be, your information is going to be blasted on the internet? They also meant that they had to check with their own physical security. Because what starts off as a so-and-so and so-and-so goes to this gym, here's the home address and email and phone number.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the next thing you know is this gym going to be targeted with graffiti, with bricks through the window? Are people leaving this gym going to be beaten up? You know, in the UK, in Glasgow, a nightclub got graffitied last week. In London, one of the oldest gay bookstores in the country got graffitied.
Right,
there seems to be a spike in these attacks on establishments.
Mm-hmm.
And so these guys have spent a lot of money looking at the physical security, working with a local security team. The Edmonton Police Service Hate Crimes is looking into it. And all of that meant with no more people coming in, no classes, and much, much higher security costs than what you'd ever see in a gym.
Right.
It's pretty much run them out of business.
Yeah. I don't know. That's... Yeah, no, there's no... I don't know. There's no way to interpret this other than it is a tragedy. If anything else, I mean, I hate it when small businesses who are trying to do something good get driven out. And Lord knows the community is not well supported. We're actually doing a pretty bad job of supporting our own small businesses, which is, it was good to see something like this succeed.
Yeah, well, we'll hopefully have some good news to pick up on in just a few minutes. We're going to jump to the next song, and we'll be back just after this. The next song being...
Bessie Smith, which is one of the old blues singers, back when the blues was a black lesbian genre, not a white man going da-na-na-na, which, by the way, killed the blues as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, point being, Bessie Smith's Down and Out Blues.
Spending my money, I didn't care. I carried my friends out for a good time, buying bootleg liquor, champagne and wine. When I began to fall so low, I didn't have a friend and no place to go. So if I ever get my hands get on my feet again. Then I'll meet my long lost friend. It's mighty strange, without a doubt. Nobody knows you when you down and out. I mean, when you down and out.
Welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And my name is Sebastian.
Now, San Francisco, the home of Harvey Milk. Actually, there's a they've announced a big bid to renovate the Harvey Milk Square, which is sort of an iconic part of the gay village in San Francisco.
On Pope Street.
But it's San Francisco is really... San Francisco and New York were the epicenters of emerging gay culture in the United States. And the idea of what people think of as the gays really comes out of San Francisco and New York.
As we came to know it, for sure, yeah. And the history of how San Francisco became gay actually has to do with the Navy. That was the primary training facility for World War II conscripts who ended up going into the Navy. And when you get all these young men coming off the farms, they go off in the Navy, they do what young men do in the night when there's no women around. Well, and some of them were like, I actually kind of like that.
The village people's in the Navy, it was a song for a reason.
It was a reference. And after World War II was over, they landed in San Francisco and they're like, no, I'm going to stick around. And San Francisco just turned into a gay mecca because of all these discharges.
Well, East Coast, West Coast, instead of the West Coast hub of LGBT culture. New York would be.
I would say specifically gay culture, not LGBT as an umbrella, but specific. Portland, I would say, is the West Coast lesbian hub historically. For completely unrelated reasons. But for various reasons in the 1980s, 70s, 80s, there was a lot of bathhouse raids all across North America.
Yeah, so a bathhouse, for our listeners who may be unfamiliar, very much based on that sort of ancient Roman principle of large space for where people can gather and bathe when baths were common. That's what it started as. And it evolved into a cultural space where, because you have to think about the context of the time. You know, in many states it would have been illegal to do certain homosexual things. Being seen together, you know, very often they would have wives and children as cover for being gay. So they needed a place to go, which isn't a seedy hotel. And that's really the space that bathhouses filled. It was this sort of pop-up space where certain interactions amongst people of the same sex were able to happen sort of unperturbed.
And because it was a... men's only space and
age restricted
there's a whole bunch of things that worked in its favor, and it turned into a thing. And it actually, superficially, it has a lot in common with Turkish baths. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you have bathing culture around the world. You have, you know, Finnish sauna culture. You have Japanese onsen culture, that sort of thing. But in Turkish baths, they actually do have musicians come in every so often. And that is the space that they ended up filling eventually. So things like Tori Amos actually got her start in the New York bathhouse scene. And there's a few other musicians. And for some reason, it's all flown out of my mind and I can't remember them. But
I want to say Cyndi Lauper, I think, also did some bathhouses.
I think she did performance at bathhouses. Oh, Bette Midler started in bathhouses. But also Frankie Knuckles, the guy who is considered to be the father of house music. So Dance in House started specifically in Detroit and Chicago gay bathhouses. And it was people spinning the old vinyl. They're in the room with the bar. In the back, there's the workout room with the gym equipment that's never used, because that's not really what the gym is for. Because really, you go into the gym and you sit on a bench for like 5 minutes. You go, ooh, that was a good workout. Time for the steam room. And then you go in the steam room. And
anyway, that's
where the light always needs to be replaced.
There's a lot of rooms, a lot of dark corridors. Yeah. And often a lot of smaller rooms that you can rent by the hour.
But also always a front room that is the public space.
Yes.
You don't have sex in that room.
When we say public space, it's a communal space.
Communal space, the open space with the bar and the sometimes they have food as well.
But there are Canadian bathhouses. Yeah. So Project Soap, for example, I think was...
Operation
Soap. Yeah. Was that Vancouver or Toronto?
That was Toronto.
Which was police bathhouse, police raids on bathhouses. Yeah. And they were, the argument being that, you know, these venues, by virtue of having so many homosexuals, must be hotbeds of crime and sedition. When in fact, there was consenting adults, everything there was legal.
I mean,
and it was just an excuse to round up the homosexuals.
Really, it was just a hotbed of hotbeds.
That's very, very accurate description.
See what I did there?
But in the 80s, San Francisco, this epicenter of queer culture, banned bathhouses.
Right.
There was a very conservative bent in the city, and they felt, you know, in the 80s, it's the height of the HIV epidemic.
Yeah.
There was a lot of misinformation, a lot of fear, and they took it out on the bathhouses.
There's misinformation. There's also a lack of information. And all they knew at that point in time was that it was sexually transmitted.
Well, it was called GRITS, gay-related immuno disease. It's not gay-related. I mean, in some part of Africa now, it's like straight women are the highest percentile that have HIV.
And actually, historically, they actually traced it back. HIV got into North America from a Belgian family.
Mm.
So it was a straight couple who brought it over. But that's unrelated.
So the reason why we bring this up is now that San Francisco is looking at legalizing the licensing of bathhouses in San Francisco. Which, for a kind of cultural epicenter, this is a really big deal.
Yep.
Now, if you look at in Toronto, I think Ottawa does have a bathhouse, but I mean, it's not really well frequented.
Not that we know.
Not that, I don't think I've ever been there. But in Toronto, they have one or two, and it serves as a venue where there's security to get in, there's a lot of people milling about. And this boils down to personal safety. We've talked in our show a lot about people who went on a Grindr date and got beaten up.
Like,
there was a story this week where 50 people, 50 high-ranking CEOs in an Indian city, I forget which one, all got beaten up and robbed through Grindr dates.
Oof.
And so there's a sense of personal security, personal safety that needs to happen. And what bathhouses do is there's a lot of people there. There's a lot of people keeping an eye out.
They have very good security.
And it's good security. So you could do the kind of activities that people know what I'm alluding to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in a much safer environment than a Grindr hookup in a sleazy motel.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that's the purpose. These things are going to happen one way or the other.
Yeah.
But in places like Toronto, Vancouver, maybe San Francisco, bathhouses serve as that much safer place for it to happen.
It's like a safe injection site.
Well, actually, yeah, you're not that... Well, I mean, it's in some sense, quite literally.
Yeah, there's a pun there as well.
But, you know, it's you're not that far off.
Yeah.
You know, it's people who are going to do this one way or the other.
It's all about harm reduction.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I went into a bathhouse to see what it was like many years ago. And the first thing you see before you even get to the front cashier is, like, stacks of condoms and so on. So Yeah, safety first is definitely a big focus for them. Well, we'll see. It is unlikely that any of our radio listeners are in communities with a bathhouse. They're quite not that easy to find.
They're more common than you think, though.
Well, I think they're a little rare. Yeah. They're usually in big cities.
You're usually an hour's drive away from one, whether you realize it or not.
I don't know. I disagree.
Even in the
I mean, if you're in
small town gay bar,
if you're in
small
Saskatoon, I mean, I don't know if you're going to be an hour away.
You would be alarmed.
I would.
Do you know what we can do?
Agree to disagree.
We can look it up after the show.
We will. But we're playing out. We've hit the end of the show. Song we're leaving with is
Gentleman Reg, who has sort of a bluesy downtempo sound on occasion. Kind of a interesting guy from Toronto. With his song, If It Makes You Happy.
And we'll be back next week. If you want to keep on top of the biggest gay news of the day, our Instagram and Facebook for queer.news has been putting out daily digests. So the biggest news of each day, released each day around 3 or 4 p.m. So follow those if you want to stay on top of the big stories. I've been Luke Smith.
And I have been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Play for mosquitoes and everywhere in between. We went searching through thrift store jungles. Found Geronimo's rifle, Marilyn's shampoo, and Benny Goodman's corset and pen. Well, okay, I made this sound. I promised you I'd never give up. If it makes you happy, take home. If it makes